talk to you this morning about the ideal mother. There is a mother in Scripture that is, I believe, the best picture of an ideal mother that we could find in the Bible. Her name is Hannah. Hannah, who lived during the close of the period of the Judges, was the favorite of two wives of a man named Elkanah. And let me just say that plural wives was never authorized in the Old Testament, but it was tolerated. But this man named Elkanah did have two wives. Hannah was the favorite of those two, and the other was named Peninnah. In 1 Samuel 1, verse 1, now there was a certain man of Ramathaim Zophim of the mountains of Ephraim, and his name was Elkanah, the son of Jeroham, the son of Elihu, the son of Tohu, the son of Zuf, and Ephraimite. That means he was from the tribe of Joseph and the family of Ephraim, one of Joseph's two sons. And he had two wives. The name of one was Hannah, and the name of the other was Peninnah. Peninnah had children, but Hannah had no children. This man went up from his city yearly to worship and sacrifice to the Lord of hosts in Shiloh, which is where the temple was at the time, or tabernacle. Also, the two sons of Eli, Hophni and Phinehas, the priests of the Lord, were there. Eli was the high priest, and Hophni and Phinehas were his sons, priests under him. And whenever the time came for Elkanah to make an offering, he would give portions to Peninnah, his wife, and all her sons and daughters. But to Hannah he would give a double portion, for he loved Hannah, although the Lord had closed her womb. That is, the Lord had providentially withheld her from bearing children, and I believe for a purpose. Though childless for years, Hannah became the mother of Samuel and personified ideal motherhood under Old Testament law. Many lessons can be illustrated by events in her life. First of all, Hannah was a godly woman. She went yearly to Shiloh, which only the men were required to do under the law of Moses. According to Exodus 34, verse 23, three times in the year all your men shall appear before the Lord, the Lord God of Israel. Men were required to go three times a year, but women were not required to go, but she went up. She prayed earnestly. According to 1 Samuel 1, verses 9 and 10, so Hannah arose after they had finished eating and drinking in Shiloh. Now Eli the priest was sitting on the seat by the doorpost of the tabernacle of the Lord. That's pretty much where he was until a sacrifice needed to be made so he could be accessible by the people. And she was in bitterness of soul and prayed to the Lord and wept in anguish. And so she prayed bitterly. She prayed regularly. And she was praying bitterly, pouring out her son unto the Lord. She desired to be a mother. Her heart grieved for a son. And this grief manifests itself in prayer. Her rival also provoked her severity to make her miserable because the Lord had closed her womb. And so here was Peninnah had many sons and daughters, and here was Hannah who had no son and no daughter, and that was bad enough, but the other wife of Elkanah would ridicule her and provoke her and make her even more miserable. So it was year by year when she went up to the house of the Lord that she provoked her, the one wife provoked Hannah. Therefore she, Hannah, wept and did not eat. And so she was so grief-stricken by this constant provoking on top of the failure to bear a child that she wept and could not eat at times. Then Elkanah, her husband, said to her, Hannah, why do you weep? Why do you not eat? And why is your heart grieved? Am I not better to you than 10 sons? He just didn't get it that a husband did not satisfy the motherly instinct, the desire of a woman to have a child. And plus, she had to share him with Peninnah. And so it was not sufficient that she had a good husband who loved her. She wanted a child as well. So her heart grieved for her son. Many married women today do not want the bother of bearing and raising children. They don't want the weight gain. They don't want the responsibility. Then on the other hand, you've got women who use childbearing as a means of making more money. But women simply in general, there are certainly exceptions, don't have the same attitude towards motherhood that Hannah seemed to have in this Old Testament period. One purpose of marriage is to fill the earth by bringing forth children. In Genesis chapter 1 and verse 28, then God blessed them, that is Adam and Eve, and God said to them, be fruitful and multiply, fill the earth and subdue it. Have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the air, and over every living thing that moves on the earth. And so that's what Hannah wanted to do. She wanted to do her part in filling the earth. She wanted to do her part in bringing forth offspring. She wanted a child that was hers. And yes, there were other children. There were children around the house, but they were feminine children. Hannah dedicated her son to God before she even had a son. She realized that her son was a gift from God. In chapter 1, verse 12, beginning, it happened as she continued praying before the Lord that Eli washed her mouth. This is the high priest. He was sitting there. He was watching her. He saw her mouth moving. And Hannah spoke in her heart, only her lips moved, but her voice was not heard. Therefore, Eli thought she was drunk. He jumped to a conclusion there, which he shouldn't have jumped to. He prejudged her. He was prejudiced against her and thought that she was drunk. When she was not drunk, and gave no real indication of that, she was praying silently, and her lips were moved. Levi said to her, how long will you be drunk? Put your wine away from you. And Hannah answered and said, no, my Lord, I am a woman of sorrowful spirit. I have drunk neither wine nor intoxicating drink, but have poured out my soul before the Lord. Do not consider your maidservant a wicked woman, for out of the abundance of my complaint and grief I have spoken until now. I have simply been praying the Lord out of my complaint and my grief over not having a son. I've just been pleading for God to give me a son. Then Eli answered and said, go in peace, and the God of Israel grant your petition which you have asked of him. And she said, let your maidservant find favor in your sight. So the woman went her way and ate, and her face was no longer sad. And so she had received this communication from the priest, which she presumed would be also from the Lord, that she would then have a child, and so she was no longer grieved. She had faith in God, and she ate, and her face was no longer sad. Then they rose early in the morning and worshiped before the Lord and returned and came to their house at Ramah. And Elkanah knew Hannah his wife, and the Lord remembered her. And so on this particular occasion, the Lord saw to it that she would conceive, and she did. And it came to pass the process of time that Hannah conceived and bore a son, and called his name Samuel, saying, because I have asked for him from the Lord. And so a gift from God, I believe, is what the name Samuel means. Anytime you see a name that begins or ends in L, it has something to do with God. This is a gift from God. She had asked him from the Lord, and the Lord had granted him unto her. So she acknowledged that and gave him a name that commemorated that fact. In Psalm 127, 3 through 5, behold, children are heritage from the Lord. The fruit of the womb is a reward. Like arrows in the hand of a warrior, so are the children of one's youth. Happy is the man whose quiver, who has his quiver full of them. They shall not be ashamed, but shall seek with their enemies in the gate. Of course, that's a figure of speech. You keep your arrows in a quiver, and so if your children are like arrows, then spiritually speaking, you will have a quiver full of them, and that's what the psalmist there is saying. Happy is the man whose quiver is full of arrows, that is, whose home is full of children. They shall not be ashamed, but shall seek with their enemies in the gate. So she realized her son was a gift from God. She brought him to the house of God after weaning him, just as she had promised to do. She had promised to God, if you'll give me a son, I will dedicate him to service in the temple, which was something that was often done in that time. Now the man Elkanah and all his house went up to offer to the Lord the yearly sacrifice and his vow. But Hannah did not go up. It was her practice to go up, but now she did not. She was with child. Or she had a child. For she said to her husband, not until the child is weaned, then I will take him, that he may appear before the Lord and remain there forever. So she's not going back until the time comes for her to take Samuel and commit him to the temple and leave him there with Eli the high priest. And Elkanah, her husband, said to her, "Do what seems best to you. Wait until you have weaned him. Only let the Lord establish his word." So the woman stayed and nursed her son until she had weaned him. Now when she had weaned him, she took him up with her with 3 bulls, 1 ephah of flour, and a skin of wine, and brought him to the house of the Lord in Shiloh, and the child was young. And they slaughtered a bull and brought the child to Eli. And she said, "O my Lord, as your soul lives, my Lord, I am the woman that stood by you here praying to the Lord. For this child I pray, the Lord has granted me my petition which I asked of him." Now here she is addressing Eli as Lord. She's not talking to God. It's a word which simply means superior, much as when Paul said Lord when he saw Jesus and didn't know who he was there in Acts chapter 9. It's simply a recognition of one who is superior. She realized she's talking to a priest, and so she addresses him as Lord. But then she says, "I pray to the Lord." She's talking about God, of course, there. "Therefore I have also lent him to the Lord. As long as he lives, he shall be lent to the Lord." So they worship him, the Lord there. That's 2 Chronicles chapter 31 and verse 6. Anyway, this interesting bit of information, which gives us an idea about how old Samuel was when she brought him to the temple, or to the tabernacle. Besides those males from 3 years old and up who were written in the genealogy, that descended to everyone who entered the house of the Lord his daily portion of the work service, workman service by his division. This is when the David finally made orders, or orders were made, not David's much, but orders were made, because the priests were so many they had to divide them up into various orders to regulate their service in the tabernacle. Or by the 2 Chronicles, it would be in the temple. But males from 3 years old and up, and so Samuel probably was about 3 years old when Hannah, his mother, brought him to the tabernacle in fulfillment of her promise to God that that's what she would do if he would just give her a child. And to the priests who were written in the genealogy according to their father's house, and to the Levites from 20 years old and up according to their work by their division, and to all who were written in the genealogy, their little ones and their wives, their sons, their daughters, the whole company of them, for their faithfulness, they sanctified themselves in holiness. So Hannah not only recognized that her son would be, and finally was, a gift from God, she rejoiced in her motherhood when she was given a son. She praised God for his salvation. Hannah prayed and said, "My heart rejoices in the Lord. My horn is exalted in the Lord. I smile at my enemies because I rejoice in your salvation." The word horn there is a figurative expression. We see from time to time as October 30th approaches, or October 31st approaches, pictures of the autumn vegetables for the fall of the year. And oftentimes there is a what's called a cornucopia that has fruits such as grapes and things tumbling out of it. The cornucopia is a kind of a horn, and so it's used figuratively here for her figurative container of all the blessings that God had blessed her with, particularly the blessing of a son. Her horn was exalted in the Lord. She said, "I smile at my enemies because I rejoice in your salvation." Hannah didn't bother her anymore. It doesn't mean Hannah didn't try to bother her, but whatever Hannah did didn't bother Hannah anymore, because now Hannah had a son and she was no longer grief-stricken. So she not only praised God for his salvation, but she recognized that true religion makes a soul happy in its relationship to God. And she had true religion. And we're not saying that she was not happy at all because she had a son, but that was an emptiness in her life. That was what she needed to fulfill her life. And God gave that to her. And again, I believe that he was put in that position so that she would be, because she would be the one, that the kind of a person that would raise a baby, raise a child, who would be the kind of man that Samuel was, and that was the kind of man that God would soon need. Because after Samuel reached adulthood, Eli and both his sons died. And there were no priests. The only surviving son was too young to serve in the priesthood. And so Samuel basically became the priest in Eli's stead. But if it hadn't been for Hannah's prayer, there would have been no Samuel there. And so she was used by God to bring about this particular situation. And I said, well, in verse 3, therefore with joy he will draw water from the wells of salvation. And talking about basically spiritual water from the wells of God that salvation comes from. Oftentimes water and well are used figuratively for the blessings of God as the source of those blessings. Consider the Beatitudes there along this same line. Seeing the multitudes, he went up on a mountain, and when he was seated, his disciples came to him. Then he opened his mouth and taught them, saying, blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they shall be filled. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the sons of God. Blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when they revile and persecute you and say all kinds of evil against you falsely for my sake. Rejoice and be exceeding glad, for great is your reward in heaven, for so they persecuted the prophets who were before you. Now, these Beatitudes basically are characteristics that we see in heaven. She was one who hungered and thirsted after righteousness. She was one who was merciful. She was one who mourned. And she was one who tried to make, tried to keep peace in her family. And so she is very exemplary in her character. Well, what are some of the other lessons illustrated in the lives of Hannah? Well, first of all, long years of meekly enduring trials may be the divine training ground for higher spiritual ends. And I believe we see that in Hannah. Had she not so yearned for a son that she promised to dedicate him to the tabernacle, then if she had ever had a son, there's no reason to think she would have dedicated him to the tabernacle, but she promised God that she would, and when the time came, she did that very thing, and Samuel became a judge and a prophet and a priest in Israel. He was the last of the last of the judges and the first of a long line of prophets. Also, great things, fervent prayer is indeed powerful. And that's what James tells us, the fervent prayer of a righteous man avails much. And her fervent prayer was powerful, and it did avail much. Not only that, but great things can come out of a not-so-ideal home situation. She did not have an ideal home situation. She had to share her husband with another woman. Again, that was tolerated under the Old Testament, but it never authorized. When the Pharisees asked Jesus in Matthew 19:9 about whether a man can divorce his wife for just any reason, Jesus says it was not so from the beginning. God made them male and female. He made two people, a man and a woman. And he was to cleave them to her for the rest of his life. That was the ideal situation. One man, one woman for life. And that's what it is in the New Testament. It's going to be it is to be enforced under the new law, though it was not so much enforced, but polygamy was tolerated under the old law. But great things can come out of a not-so-ideal home situation, and that same thing is true today. Many times people have risen from poverty to become rich and to become leaders in the world, and to come out of bad situations and be a blessing unto others. Conclusion, we certainly need to pour out our needs, need to be as dedicated to God as Hannah was. Hannah was dedicated to God. All she wanted was a son that she could nurse for 2 or 3 years and prepare him for tabernacle service and then take him and give him to God for that service, which she did. We need to pour out our needs to God in prayer. As Hannah did on a regular basis. Oftentimes, well, I don't know about anybody else here. I know that my prayer life could probably be improved somewhat. I might not quite pray as regularly as I need to, but we need to do that on a regular basis. We need to show our dependence upon God and talk to Him about our needs. From time to time. I want to also look at Proverbs 31 with you and point out that Here in Proverbs 31, we have the truth, the evidence that the old adage is true, the hand that rocks the cradle rules the world. In Proverbs 31, beginning with verse 10, who can find a virtuous wife? For her words is far above rubies. The heart of her husband safely trusts her, so he will have no lack of kin. She does him good and not evil all the days of her life. She seeks wool and flax and willingly works with her hands. She is like the merchant ship. She brings food, her food, from afar. She also rises as long as it is yet night and provides food for her household and a portion for her maidservants. She considers a field and binds it. From her pocket she plants a vineyard. She girds herself with strength and strengthens her arms. She perceives that her merchandise is good and her lamp does not go out by night. She stretches out her hands to the distaff and her hand holds the spindle. She extends her hand to the poor. Yes, she reaches out her hands to the needy. She is not afraid of snow for her household, for all her household is clothed with scarlet. She makes tapestry for herself. Her clothing is fine linen and purple. Her husband is known in the gates when he sits among the elders of the land. He makes linen garments and sells them and supplies sashes for the merchants. Strength and honor are her clothing. She shall rejoice in time to come. She opens her mouth with wisdom, and on her tongue is the law of kindness. She watches over the ways of her household and does not eat the bread of idleness. Her children rise up and call her blessed. Her husband also, and he praises her. Many daughters have done well, but you excel them all. Charm is deceitful and beauty is passing, but a woman who fears the Lord shall be praised. Give her of the fruit of her hand, and let her own works praise her in the gates. So see, a picture in 1 Samuel, a picture of a woman who was an ideal mother, and then we have in Proverbs 31 a thorough description of an ideal mother. An ideal mother is one who is very active on behalf of her family and her husband. It's often said that a man is to be the head of his house, his wife is to be the next. And I believe Proverbs 31 indicates that. She sees to the arrangement of things in the home. She sees to it that the home runs smoothly.